Podcast Network, AfterBuzz TV, over 20 million weekly downloads in over 150 countries, and your number one source for after-show entertainment. AfterBuzz TV, the destination for TV superfans, producing aftershows for over 300 of your favorite TV shows, interviewing celebrities and showrunners, and bringing you behind-the-scenes exclusives. All thanks to E! Entertainment's Maria Menounos, producer Kevin Undergaro, and internet leader Akamai. Now, let the buzz begin!
That's right. You want information? You will not get it.
Oh, wow.
Go away. Go away. All right. You will not learn anything today.
I'm a little scared, Bill. What's happening?
What is happening, of course, we are doing AfterBuzz TV, is the Prisoner After Show for the general episode 6, debatable on the episode number. But we have Steph Z.
That is me, and oh, this episode made me angry.
Oh, yeah?
I have so many bones to pick with education in our education system, so it just got everything stirred up.
Got it. And we have Meredith Placco.
Hey, guys. Oh, wow. I'm still recovering from not having a voice. After the shows last week, I got taken away.
Symbolically or metaphorically or realistically?
Both, actually. I got taken away in a cart, and they experimented on my voice, and it's slowly coming back. So I hope it's actually my voice and not the voice of someone else.
It's got a little rasp.
Yeah.
It's good. It's working.
That's right.
It's got a deep, sexy voice.
It's working.
And that's right. I am Phil Svitek. Speaking of voices, you, as the fans, have a voice. Let us know your thoughts and opinions. You can do that by subscribing however you want us, whether on YouTube.com/AfterBuzzTV, SoundCloud, iTunes, all that fun stuff. We're there for you, and we're free 99.
You know, that makes me think it costs 99
yeah, it does.
Cents. I don't know that
free?
I like the free 99. Yeah. I mean, I'm just saying, you say it week after week, and I finally, I just have to say something. It's the episode of The Voice and Education. Free 99 makes me think I have to pay 99 cents.
It's true.
Well, nothing's really free.
Well, true.
Maybe.
Well.
Anyway.
Yeah.
By the way, April 17th is coming up. What is April 17th? That's the big meetup at Port Merion where obviously The Prisoner was filmed on location. The 601 Society is doing their annual meetup, and Darren Nesbitt, who is number two in It's Your Funeral, will be guesting. As always, we say it every week, this will be spoiler-filled every now and then. We try to avoid as many as we can. Steph C is new to the Prisoner. Meredith and I are not, so we might have a slip-up here and there, but we try to avoid as much as possible. And, of course, we still have 11 more weeks to go, and so don't worry. If we don't get to it today, we will probably get to it sometime, although we're finding that harder and harder as we continue.
We have a lot of opinions.
Yes.
We do. And so, of course, today, without further ado, we are talking about The General.
Yes.
You don't like The General, Steph?
No, I do. I mean, I don't know. Are we going to skip right there to The General? The actual General? Yeah.
No,
okay,
we can't reveal
that
just
yet. I was
yet.
Like, what are we doing here?
So, why don't you, overall impressions for you guys on The General?
The actual general or the episode The General?
The
what we
the
find
episode.
To be the general? Oh.
Yes.
I thought this was a very interesting play on education. Mm-hmm. I feel like it is so, I don't know, with education I feel like we are in this place where we are taught facts, we reiterate facts. So many people today don't understand or know why they believe the things they do. So this really touched home to me. It's that whole mentality. It's like you could literally save a lot of time and, you know, look at some screen and be fed some osmosis weird information and reiterate facts. Does that mean you know about it? Does that mean you are educated? I don't think so.
Okay.
That's my overall, that's the tip of my iceberg, but there it is.
Fair enough. Meredith?
Well, Steph makes a great point with the takeaway of this episode. It just reminded me of all my, you know, AP and honors classes, and especially growing up in Florida, we had to take something called the FCAT, where they basically rewrote our entire 7th and 11th grade years that were only studied to pass this exam. So we didn't actually learn anything. We just learned how to pass this exam. And it's like, to be honest, I'd actually rather have a 3-minute lecture fed into my brain for me to know those facts, because I still didn't learn anything. I just know useless facts.
Yes.
Very true. And what I also will say, in terms of that, right, the facts that you're fed and that you actually memorize, very specific to the prisoner, it also has a side and a connotation, right? If you believe that, hey, like, we know that Germany did not win World War II, but if you're all of a sudden spoon-fed this every day and told to memorize it, that, let's say, Germany won World War II, eventually that could become quote-unquote fact, even though that's not actual real history. Right,
and well, that's mind control. That's brainwashing right there.
But that's what our history books do in school. Like, what do we teach these kids still? We teach these kids to segregate. We teach these kids things that happened years and years ago of why so many organizations, like, why people fought. You know what I mean? Like, war, I don't know. Oh, it gets me
it's
so
interesting because, yeah, we teach dates, we teach names, we teach places, but we don't teach the why.
We don't teach the why and the what went wrong and the how to fix it.
Mm-hmm.
Much like we don't teach kids how to deal in the real world these days. There's not like a life 101, especially when you go to college. There's not like a checkbook 101.
There really should be, though.
There's not any classes that actually give you the tools. You know, and I hate to say this because I was, you know, I graduated, and I'm not trying to toot my own horn or anything, but I graduated, you know, honor society, all that. I know you probably wouldn't think that either. But I think that there is an unequal balance of people that do follow this path of having to be super book smart. They sometimes lack common sense, you know, and I've traveled a lot and I feel like that's what's helped me balance out being exposed to a lot of different things. But what really is education? Is education reciting a bunch of shit that happened in our past that who really knows what happened? Like, someone could have just created it? Or is education being able to be in certain situations and relate to people and find solutions and deal with life? Like, wait, who judges that? A freaking test? Because in New York, we had the same thing. We had the Regents exam. It's the same thing, and it's all horse crap. Ugh.
So passionate.
And this is one thing that I'm super passionate about, especially in our history books today, because I go to schools and I, you know, do lectures for kids on bullying. I visit a bunch of schools and some in New York. And in
you
New
teach
York-
them how to bully.
Yes. No, I – shut up. I do not teach kids how to bully. I talk about bullying and anti-bullying programs and stuff like that. But with that said, last year I was in a history class in a high school, one of the most prestigious high schools on Long Island in New York. I looked in the history book. There's two sentences about 9/11 in our history books over 10 years later. Two sentences. Like, that's crazy to me.
But okay, this, like, not to divulge too far into this, just in terms of that, like, what kind of a history book was it? Like, because if it's from like Renaissance up until modern day,
oh no, this history book was printed like 2 years ago. They update them. It was an updated book of an event that happened 10 years ago that they just don't know how to say yet or what to say yet, because we're still fighting this freaking war. And if war worked, there'd be one, and then we'd be scared of war, so we'd actually talk to each other and figure shit out. But no, we're not educated enough to talk to each other and find solutions.
And speaking of that, really, really side note, I told you from the get-go that if you put something out there as absolute and you make it fact, for example, Steph C said she never swears on air and she just said the word shit.
No. I said no.
Anyway.
Meredith backed me up.
Okay,
I said I have never said the F word because I know where to draw the line.
All right.
But the S word all the time.
Yeah.
So I know we have to talk about the episode, but I just want to touch on something Steph said real quick. It's interesting too, because with the history books and as it ties into this episode, what you're spoon fed is from it's in the eyes of the victor. So because here in America, we gloss over, like, I remember in my advanced history classes, we never talked about the Japanese internment camps that we had here. They weren't in history books. My professor chose to talk about them. But in every culture, you have this, especially, gosh, in Japanese culture, they completely gloss over, what they did in Nanjing. And you know, every culture you see this, and I find it, you know, interesting that here in The Prisoner, they could have just been spoon-feeding these people whatever random facts they wanted to just, like, that would have been an extra mind, can't say that word, can't say that F word.
Screw.
Mind screw, thank you.
Gotcha.
if they had actually been teaching them wrong facts.
Well, that's the thing, too. So are we really educating people, or are we recruiting them to think the way we want them to think? I think there's a big difference.
On the nose.
Very good. Well, I have a lot to say.
All right, I'll shut up. You can say it.
Let's start with the more factual side of the episode.
Oh, right. There you go.
The irony of that statement. So Lewis Greifer wrote this episode, and it was actually him who introduced Mark Stein to McGoohan.
Oh.
And I know we keep building up. Eventually, we're gonna hit a blowing.
Epic rap battle between Mark Stein and
there
McGoohan.
We go. And McGoohan, yes. And as kind of you guys have pointed out, it's no secret that this was written in response to creativity and imagination being outdone in favor of memorization at the time. Now, if you look closely, Joshua Adams is the pseudonym that Greifer used because he was a script editor for another show, and so contractually he couldn't do this, but he wanted to do anyway. The good news is because of how close he was with the two, McGoohan and Mark Stein, there weren't a lot of script changes from what he wrote to what ended up on screen, so that's always good to know. There is a theory about kind of all of this if you guys want to dig deeper, and we can sort of talk about it by Paul Ramsden. On the theory of deep learning versus surface learning, and so that kind of tied into the culture. And in terms of the general and more specifically the professor, right, we'll talk about the professor as a celebrity of, you know, this academia, but it was also a reflection of the time where you have academics like Carl Sagan, Margaret Mead, Marshall McLuhan, Noam Chomsky, and so on and so forth, where they almost became celebrities in their own right. And but the works that they had were now being taken out of context and not reflective of what they ultimately wanted to say. So that's kind of the factual side of this. But let's kind of we'll keep to broader strokes in terms of the episode, and then because I definitely want to spend more time talking about it, you know, all this other stuff. So we get introduced to speed learning at the cafe, and what was your guys' first initial reaction besides just anger from Steph Z at the thought of speed learning?
I wasn't angry about the speed learning. I would have loved to do high school in 3 minutes. Like, I'm all about, you know, being efficient. I was just, you know, so I was maybe not believing, you know, that it could happen that quickly, but, I thought it was, you know, if they really could do that, I would give it a shot.
Well, I mean, it's a classic case of mind control and, I'm having a brain freeze. When, you know, we saw this in films back, you know, 50, 60 years ago, where they would put, like, frames in between, like, the pre-commercials to kind of subliminal messaging. It's along the same science behind subliminal messaging, where they flash images and information directly into you, and you absorb it without ever having that conscious thought of absorbing it. Where, you know, in theory, like, this is almost like in perfect, like, say this were Gene Roddenberry's sci-fi world, everyone would be learning this for the advancement and betterment of humankind. But in the prisoner world, it looks like they're trying to do experiments to, hey, if we can get these people to recite this information and plant it in their heads, what else can we plant inside their heads?
Absolutely. And I feel like the theory of wanting to learn really fast has kind of been out there. I mean, there's that superstition, put the book beneath your pillow and at night you'll absorb it.
Yes.
That
also works. Eating the hearts of your enemies will gain their powers.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
She should try it sometime.
Can so I have your heart, Phil?
But, you know, one of the interesting things that comes out of this is the sort of introduction of number 12. And... you know, we've seen number 12 in the past. However, this is a new number 12, a male number 12 at that. And, you know, he's...
We saw number 12 last episode, a male number 12, who was the double of him.
Yeah, the double.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
But
so that, again, made me feel a little bit like, this order, I don't know.
In terms of the episode numbers?
Yeah.
Well, you know, there's also the fact that we get we get a repeat number 2. In theory, right, everything now is sort of back to normal, whereas in ABC with Colin, you had the big red phone that we talked about. We talked in terms of German expressionism. Now he's not as aware of, you know, his time, and he you know, he's much more focused on the goal and doing what he wants, and he doesn't care about that side of it, really.
Yeah.
Totally. What do you? But well, I mean, Steph C, how do you? This is right. This is the first time we kind of get someone to be number two again. How did you?
And there's number two. You're talking about number 12.
Number two. Right number now, two. Number
yeah,
two.
Yeah, because it's the same.
Sorry, I was reading a note. Looking dude. I recognized right away that it was, you know, one of the same number twos. It didn't really, you know, do much. It didn't stand out for me in a way that stood out for me that we just had a number 12, which is double of him. So now there's another number 12. So right away I was like, oh, number 12's fishy. Mm-hmm. Like that's more what I felt than anything with number two.
Do you guys think that you could ultimately trust number 12? Or was he, you know, kind of in on it? That's always the tough call.
The problem is with this one, they didn't really give us a lot of context for 12. Mm-hmm. There was not a lot of backstory there. We didn't really know much about him. Like, suddenly he's helping 6, you know, but we never really got a motive out of him. It was just like, I'm going to do this, and a lot of it was left to be inferred.
Yeah. See, I felt that he was kind of shady in the beginning, and then when we see him switch the tape, and it seems like there's a new tape, it's kind of like, he's setting him up, and then he gives him information, and, you know, in order to later get into certain places, and it feels like he was not on his side, and then maybe he was on his side, because then he didn't, and then number 6 at the end didn't want to tell on number 12, but you knew that number 12 was responsible and that they kind of knew that he got the information from number 12. So it was this kind of, maybe number 12 is a little bit unsure.
And, you know, to that point, right? So this is more towards the end of the episode, but when they're feeding the general this information of, okay, write this down, and they're, you know, beat by beat of, okay, number 6 is here, number 12 had access to this. You know, it takes a, you know, the weird coin thing to get in. And it's like, okay, the facts that you are feeding the general, of course it's going to come to the conclusion that it was number 12. Now, it was number 12, so it's a correct conclusion. But based off the facts that you feed it, yes, you will get the answer that you want.
Exactly.
Right.
Well, and I think, though, in regards to who number 12's side was ultimately on, without spoiling anything, what becomes of him at the end of the episode, I think, speaks volumes for he was true to his goals.
Absolutely. So, you know, we'll talk about the professor escaping, because that'll kind of tie into the wax malls and everything like that. But in terms of learning, right, our prisoner does not want to learn this information, and yet here he is, and he just is forced to do it in a certain respect. He does.
Yeah, it's not like he thinks to close his eyes or turn away from the screen. He just is like, oh, and before he knows what's happening, it's done. And then, you know, it's interesting how they choose to. It's interesting to me how number 6 chooses to allow some of these things to happen to him.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he obviously he knew something was up, but he's just like, oh well, I'll just stare. And I don't know, like, I guess that's something I am having a hard time wrapping my head around, is, like, why does he allow himself to submit to some of these?
I don't know that he has a choice.
Yeah.
Sometimes, early on, it seems like he doesn't get those choices.
Right.
But this episode seemed like a conscious choice to...
Yeah, maybe. I felt like he was watching, and it's like, as soon as you look, you're, like, sucked in. It's almost like Dr. Faustus with the ring, you know?
Yeah.
It's like, focus, and you're screwed. As soon as you see the ring, you're screwed.
And that's what, you know, so at night, right, that's when, in terms of really finding out who number 12 is and, you know, whether we can trust number 12 or not, it becomes the when versus what scenario, where he asks him, what was the treaty?
Mm-hmm.
And you know, the prisoner gives the date instead. And so I really felt finally it was an interesting scenario, because for the first time, things are being used against the prisoner in order, you know, and to gain his trust. And it was like, oh wow, you're right, why am I being succumbed to this village?
Right.
Yeah, it is. You're right, though. It is nice to kind of see, nice is the right word, it's interesting and compelling to see him get worn down, you know, because you can't fight against it forever. So it's like we start to see him fall into that trap, and then someone comes and helps them out of it.
And, you know, this kind of ties into an interesting point. Default human behavior, right? Mm-hmm. And so part of memorization and all these various things is what is termed as default human behavior. And so it's when you go about your life in a very unconscious way. Yeah, because why? You have it all memorized. You could call it muscle memory to a certain degree. But let's say if you're in traffic, your default human setting is to just be angry and upset. Okay, well, you have the choice to not necessarily be upset. You know, there's things that you could do, but you have to choose to think and go beyond just like, okay, I'm just going to be angry because traffic equals anger.
Mm-hmm.
But you have to be aware of that fact.
Yeah.
Makes sense?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Do you guys want to touch upon that? I really like that theory, and I was hoping we could talk about it a little bit more.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like, I don't know. It's funny because we're here in LA, so I feel like a lot of people default to that behavior, especially when it comes to traffic. But I feel like it's worked sometimes not to. But I also think that, you know, that is trainable, so to speak. Like, that's one of the easier, maybe not easier, but one of the things where we do have that instant control. Because in the car, like, for example, today, I wanted to get here early. I know you had a rough week. Mm-hmm. And I get in the canyon and I'm sitting stuck in traffic. And I'm like, I could be pissed off, or I call one of my friends that I haven't gotten to call back and talk on the phone for 20 minutes sitting in traffic. You know what I mean? Like, you have to, you have a choice always. And a lot of things that cause frustration or causes, you know what I mean? Like, you don't have that same, I feel like some of that's an easy choice. And it is. It's like, you can't ever control the things that have happened. You just have to, like, all you really have is how you react to life around you. You know?
You know, absolutely. I 100% agree. And that's why, you know, in many ways, teaching to think, right? The value of, to me, education is the idea of teaching you how to think and going beyond just the various things. And it sounds like, okay, well, if you got into, you know, the higher college and better college you get to, is evidence that you're a smart human being. Well, not necessarily.
No.
Again,
no.
You can just regurgitate information, but you have to be taught how to think. And
but that's something they don't teach.
I was going to say, I don't think,
like,
they just don't.
I was on set the other day, and it was just amazing to me because I actually had a remark on this. There was a director who was talking to a PA, and he was explaining a thought process as to why he did some, like, why they wanted this PA to do something very specific. And it wasn't just like, you do this. It was like explaining his reasoning behind it and why this would, like, come out for a better, like, shot. And it also talked, and he also was talking about how to handle other people. And it was just amazing to me. I'm like, oh my God, you just literally taught this person. Like, you didn't say do this because you have to, but it was like, here's the reasoning that if you approach these people, like, with a smile and, you know, good response, you're going to elicit a good response in return. I'm like, you literally just taught this person the baseline of how to continue in their life and do their job. And that blew my mind that, like, just that basic lesson right there was someone taught. And, like, that's not, like, in all my years of working in this industry, I've never seen someone teach that basic lesson.
Right.
Except for earlier today, you were doing that. And that's what reminded me of it.
Couple things hold true, right? Number one, the cliche of education is the journey of a lifetime.
Knowledge,
right?
Is half the battle.
It is. There you go. Very good cliche. But two, even more so now, you know, you have to, part of it, right? If there is that void in education, and especially, you can call it common sense, whatever you want, Steph. But to me, it's, you know, you just have to teach other people because they're, you know, rather than say, hey, can you do this? One, we live in this weird generation where they don't want to. And so you have to educate them on why they have to do their job in a proper way. And it doesn't have to be job related. It can be just anything.
Life in general. One of the things that's always driven me a little nuts about schooling is that the idea that everyone needs to be a doctor or a lawyer or mathematician or, you know, have some sort of, like, hard background with a degree. I've always felt that, like, we should actually allow more vocational training in schools because not everyone needs to have that high power degree because we're in that rut right now. We have too many people with too many, like, lofty degrees and we're all fighting for the same jobs, but you can't get anyone to, like, work base level, like, well, they might not be the most glorious jobs, but we still need factory workers. We still need farmers. We still need people to go out and do the day in and day out. And I think, you know, that would be something that in education that, you know, just by giving people facts, they're not going to really learn how to handle
and then,
life.
You know, one thing, Stephanie, hopefully this sparks even more of what you're going to, but to me, you know, knowledge is one thing, but wisdom is doing it. So you don't have to be like, you know, you don't have, so many people have quote unquote all these facts and knowledge. I look at the people, let's say on Jeopardy or any of these types of game shows, and how far can you really get with that? What have you really done? And if the answer is you've been able to take that and do a lot, then congratulations. But if not, it's all just useless. Go ahead.
Well, a few things for that for me. Number one, I feel like, yes, we don't teach people how to think. Agreed, I think across the board. I feel like sports and coaches do that. And I feel like a lot of the stuff that I've learned, a lot of the life lessons that I've learned come from sports, from figuring out how to team get this goal, from figuring out how to lose and bounce back. And figuring out what your strong suit is and what somebody else's strong suit is and working together, you know? So I feel like sports, you know, the one thing that we do right in our education system is these coaches. I feel like they really do teach people the whys and the work together and what you're good at, what you're not good at. So I feel like that's something that somewhat does work. I agree with you that it's unfortunate, and I think it's actually changing. One thing I do think is changing is that in school systems today, they realize that success, that icon of success, that man in a business suit with a briefcase, isn't really success anymore. Some of the most successful or some of the most wealthiest people in the world are dot-coms now. You know what I mean? Are this, are that. So I feel like that is kind of changing that picture. But any way you slice it, I still don't think we give people these tools. And you're right, Phil. It's like with these Jeopardy people, like, yeah, maybe they're going to win some money on Jeopardy. But not only do a lot of these people that are that way just have this useless almost knowledge in their head, but they don't know how to socialize a lot. You find that. And I'm not trying to like pick anyone apart. I'm just saying that somewhere along the lines in those books, in those things that a lot of these people do to try and get to this, I almost, and I might get some hate for this, want to call it an old fashioned way of thinking that you have to be so book smart. I'm not saying that you don't need book smarts, and I'm not saying that you don't need a basic intelligence to get through life. I'm just saying the way that it used to be and the way that it is now, or and it used to be, I say, you know, 20 years ago when I was in high school, when I, that even, you know, two decade gap, it has for sure changed. And the thing too that you say about, you know, people not wanting to do it, why? I feel like more so now we have this technology with these kids and these phones and this stuff. They're so used to this instant gratification or Googling it or this or that. It's like, when I drove cross country for the first time, I had to look at a map and read it. I didn't just push something and do it. Like, this phone, as much as when I run a business, it makes sense and it makes my life more efficient, it doesn't, kids don't have to think anymore. Like, if the cell phones went out, would these kids know how to do basic math problems? Would they know how to figure stuff out? Would they know how to read a map? Would they know how to do these things? Would they know how to figure out how to where to go get food? What to do? Look, they wouldn't.
Well, here's the thing. You bring up a great point. Because here's ultimately, when we start off in this world, we don't know how to do jack shit, right?
Yeah.
For lack of a better term. But guess what? To me, how you really measure education is the ability of a person, what they do when they don't know.
Right. Yeah. It's teaching critical thinking is the key. It's not teaching. I mean, I am all for, you need, I think, a basic foundation of reading, writing, and arithmetic, you know, with some basic sciences and history thrown in there is fundamental for everyone, because you should have context. You should always have context about the world that you live in. But teaching furthermore is just how to think, how to process, how to meet challenges. And I want to actually go back to something Steph was saying in terms of education. So I was really, really fortunate in high school. We had a radio station and it broadcasted throughout Miami-Dade, Palm Beach, and Broward counties. We were, you know, on the air, and I had the opportunity to put that vocation into practice. And I was able to learn things that ultimately became my career in high school. And having an outlet like that, which I think you're right, there are more outlets now as we grow, is so fundamental for learning and for children, because you can't just throw books at them because it's boring, it's tiresome, and it's just going to regurgitate, you know?
I'm not necessarily saying, because I still think to this day the first programs to get cut is music and arts,
yes,
which I think is terrible. So I'm not saying that the schools are, you know, hip to this idea yet. I'm just saying, out in the open, the more wealthy or successful, like, what, you know, the blanket statement of success, and I hate the blanket statement, but I feel like that icon, it's not just the stockbroker.
It's the outside thinkers.
Yeah, it's the creative thinkers are the ones that are going to, the movers and shakers of the world now, that are going to wind up making the big ideas and the money.
Here's a fun little quote.
Uh-oh.
You have to be odd to be number one.
I really like that.
That's so cheesy. I love it.
I know. Real fast, before we kind of get contextualize this into more of the episode, one of the things that I was going to say, even if you want to be a doctor or a lawyer, but you see this more so, unfortunately, with, you know, kind of within the arts, especially within our industry, you have these success stories, and I'm going to try to keep to a doctor so it goes beyond the scope of just entertainment. You know, you have these success stories about how this person became a doctor at 23, 24, whatever. And, you know, everyone wants that. So very much like in speed learning, you know, you get the information very, very fast and you retain it. People want success fast, you know. And there was a great article about how people, very successful people, when they actually hit the various things that they hit, you guys might not respect this example, but the guy who started McDonald's, what, you know, was 55 when he started McDonald's. And so there's all these examples of people who don't start to do something until their 40s.
And it's funny, I was actually talking to a friend of mine about this, recent, you know, graduate within last year, under this huge pressure to move to New York and become a successful fashion designer right out of college. And she finally had this realization where she's like, wait, I'm young. Why am I throwing my young life away to attain this dream that might not even be attainable, and I'm not very happy doing it? You know, she realized, she's like, maybe I should stay where I am, build the foundations for a good life and work towards my success as opposed to trying to drive myself crazy about it. And I'm like, that is actually one of the smartest things I've ever heard from a younger person, because we live in this culture where you have teenagers, people who have not even graduated high school, who are making $1 million on their YouTube channel. They are having instantaneous monetary success and social success being, you know, honestly gifted to them, where you still have this, and then you have also families who have this pressure to put on you that you have to go out and go forth and be successful. And for people who can find that happy balance that you don't have to kill yourself to be successful, kudos to them, because I'm not one of them.
I agree and I disagree with that, because I feel like, and this is coming from someone who I was, 2007 is how long ago? 8 years ago. So I was 28 27 when I started my brand.
Yeah.
And I feel like it's still kind of young. You know, I don't know. I feel like go big or go home sometimes.
Well, no, and
you
I guess
know, like, because you have to, well, think, you can't play it safe always.
Well, I think in my friend's context, she was not happy. And I think it was important for her to realize, she was doing it for the wrong reasons versus doing it for herself.
But I think
that's very different.
And to your friend's point, you know, I see so many people, especially to me, anyone under 30, honestly, doesn't have an opinion.
So you don't have an opinion?
I don't.
Quiet down over there.
I don't.
Wait, you're under 30?
I'm under 30.
He's a baby.
I'm under 30.
Don't lie to me.
He's like 26 or 27.
Oh, my God. Get out of here. Leave.
But here's the problem, right? And more so, everyone takes these facts that they know, and they're so rigid in their belief that no matter what you throw at them, they number one, don't have the life experience to kind of back it up. And so they stand firm, they stand by what they say without any actual foundation, and it's like, no, listen, the person you're arguing with is 55 years old, more oftentimes more successful than you. So just listen.
See, and I don't agree with that 100% either, though, because what? And again, like, I'm not trying to make this about me, but some of the things that at a young age I've done, traveled the world with my fashion line, like a 6 year old may never. Right, but I'm saying, like, we can't use that blanket statement because now the young people are finding success, and they're finding success. The older generations have that book success, and these younger generations that travel.
Steph, here's what I'm going to cut you off only because a couple of things. Number one, you've mentioned many times in the past, because of your travels, you have learned. Therefore, you have opened yourself up to these experiences and these learnings, right?
Right.
And so you are a rare case of that. I see a lot of people that they don't want to travel, or if they do, they just want to get drunk in Cancun, and they don't take anything away from that.
This is what I think. This is my class of life. My class of life. Every person, and this is not just because I'm from there, should live in New York City for 6 months. Should live there. Figure out how to get around. Figure out how to deal with people. No car. Figure out people, because you have so much people there. Everyone should drive cross country at least once, because once you see that you can get in your car in New York and drive to California, and you're there 4 days later if you wanted to, or however long you want, you somehow, it's this amazing thing that happens that you're like, holy shit, if I want to go somewhere, I can just get in my car and go. It's this freeing experience. Some people never travel outside their state. That's crazy to me.
I want to open that up and just say, get off your computer. Like, to what you said about the under 30, it's because now that I'm over 30, I'm like, yeah, those damn kids, they don't know what they're talking about. But I don't want to put a blanket statement on everyone. That being said, especially in the geek world, especially in like comic books and video games, I've been seeing so much online of a certain group of people that we call SJWs that, in my opinion, have never left the computer, but they have a very, very distinct idea of how the world works and how it should work, and they are very adamant and very militant in their thoughts, and it's like, no, you know, why don't you get out and go, like, volunteer at a homeless shelter, go actually see how the other half lives, like, don't sit here and tell people how they should be living their lives when you've actually never even left your frickin' computer chair. And I feel like I am kind of with you, Phil, that there are so many kids these days that have very strong opinions about a life they've never even lived. And you can't.
I agree with you guys on that. I agree I agree in that aspect of it. I just also agree that there's the older generations, like the baby boomers. Some are more so a generation of people that were that book smart. So to think out of the box, it's a little bit harder for them to understand the opportunities that.
I don't think it's age. I think it's experience. You can be 19 years old, or you can be 95 years old, and if you've had the experience, you have the authority to speak with it. If you haven't had those experiences, shut up.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right.
100%. So speaking of kind of art and the various things, the first time, so we're contacting the professor's wife, right? We saw her in the earlier broadcast, and so number six kind of goes and meets with her, and in theory, it's supposed to be a perfect marriage of knowledge and artistry. But it's not, you know, and one of the reasons I say that, because, you know, the various things that we see, a man standing on his head and things like that, right? Art is supposed to, in many ways, be a criticism to an extent of what's happening in the world.
Well, you know how much McGowan hates modern art.
We do. But their art accomplishes nothing whatsoever. Again, it's just a man standing on its head and as angry as he may be.
It references, I'm blanking on the episode name, where he enters the art show with the...
Chimes of Big Ben.
It references Chimes of Big Ben in the whole, like, what is the purpose of art? What is the context of this? Why are these people creating these things? You know, oh, he's standing on his head to open up his mind and change his perspective.
Yeah.
Oh, you have... Come on, go on. I know you have a thought. You want follow up?
No. I just feel like... And this is coming from an art major. That's what I went to school for. I have a BFA in design and photography. So I feel like art really, nowadays, what art is having enough balls to own what you made is good. That's really what it is nowadays.
It's ego.
Like there's no definition of art. There's no, like, I've been to so many art shows and I'll look at this stuff and I'll be like, seriously?
But here's the thing, for me.
So it's that artist owning that what they made is good and that people should pay money for it. And that there's a point and a reason and a story and telling that story and getting people to believe you. That's art. It's not necessarily what's on, you know what I mean?
Like, I get what you're saying, but I think, I don't know, maybe I'm more from the classical sense, you know, but you can still apply this to modern and postmodern art that it's supposed to, for me, contextualize history. Or at the very least, create a connection of human emotion. Right? I mean, yeah. Art is supposed to connect one person to the next. And so if you can communicate an idea, whatever it may be, then you've done a good job.
I agree with you. Unfortunately,
that is not the case.
I do not agree that that is the case.
Well, there you go.
Because it's like, literally, I could own that. This is the coolest thing ever. Do you feel this? Oh, my God.
Look, I made this.
Right. That stick for your art, $2,000.
I worked on that.
You can buy that now.
And now, but look at it now. Look at the texture. The crease goes through. It brings the episode plot line back to the overview, encompassing the ideas and themes.
All right.
Duh.
I get it. Thank you, Stacey. For more of our rants on modern art, check out our Chimes of Big Ben episode. Speaking of Chimes of Big Ben, I want to kind of ask this because it's out in the ethos. The professor's wife, she makes all these wax models, mm-hmm. right? And so for me, the question is a couple things. One, has she made the statues that we see? They're kind of similar, right? The surveillance ones,
yeah.
Similar to what she has made. And also, is she kind of responsible for the art program in Chimes of Big Ben? Like, has she kind of have a history here in the village?
I get the impression that they're new to the village. I mean, mm-hmm. I don't think they've been there much longer. So I don't really think she per se has been the one in charge of all that. Because I don't remember seeing her in Chimes of Big Ben. But for all
we certainly didn't.
Didn't, yeah. But yeah, I don't get that impression. I get the impression that they were brought in very recently to implement this program.
Okay.
Steph?
Yeah, honestly, I didn't think about it one way or the other when watching. I think I was more distracted on how good Number Six's art was.
It was phenomenal. So, at first, I was like, that's not an accurate representation of the person. Oh, that's who he's... Oh, I see what you're doing there, Sarah.
Yeah.
So in the sense of that, I want to talk – so the dynamic of the wife to the professor.
Mm-hmm.
Are they – because the question is still, you know, are they prisoners or are they not? And it seems like they're very much prisoners mm-hmm. in this whole thing, or at least to me, certainly the professor is, and she, you know, she cares about the –
She's
her
a prisoner in her own way. I mean, she's she's complying with the village to get what they ultimately want, she's doing it out of love, and she's being forced to do these things to keep her husband alive. I mean, she's obviously very much a prisoner.
Yeah.
She's a prisoner to love.
Ooh.
Absolutely. There you go. So through this, it's all kind of revealed that that ultimately the professor that is writing it's a wax figure, and mm-hmm. so it's not really him giving the lectures, and so the importance of him actually creating these lessons is not, you know, that this is where it gets so weird and because yeah. because it's like, again, they had to give a face to this educational system, a trusted face, and so, okay, you can say that's the professor, but then do you ultimately really need the professor? Yes, you know, he created the general, and so you can say his purpose is done, but, you know, it's always that scary thought of if they initially said, like, hey, here's the general and here's the professor that's going to be teaching you, and it's one big giant computer, it's like, whoa, what is that?
Spoiler alert.
Well, people have seen the episode.
I'm just saying. I think they have to keep him alive because no one else at the village can maintain the general. So I think that's why they kept sedating him and kept reprogramming him, was to keep him so he could keep the general running, because they obviously, you know, Number Two and his staff didn't know what the heck they were doing with that thing.
Was I the only one that thought that she was the general from the beginning? I mean, clearly Number Six did too with his art, but I thought she was the general in the beginning.
No, they definitely throw out red herrings to make you think she's the general. Yeah, no. That's totally it. Yeah.
I just wanted to see if I was...
No, you are not alone in that.
If I fall asleep during something.
No.
No, that's... I actually... I didn't think of it that way.
Well,
Yeah. Only because, I mean, it's been years since I watched it, and so I always knew that, you know, now in the rewatching, I knew it was a computer, and so I forget the first time, you know, I don't have that.
Because I thought it was her, and I thought it was her that was doing all the learnings, but they didn't want to give the woman the power to be the teacher, so therefore they had, like, she was, but I thought she was behind the whole thing, but the woman only could be the artist type, so that's what they were giving her to do, but really she was, you know, doing something else.
Absolutely.
And then when we actually meet the general, all I kept thinking about was the Imitation Game.
Yes.
Well, let's talk about, before we fully get there, let's kind of, let's get there, right? I thought it was very symbolic that the way number 12 and number 6 kind of made this whole plan and how they're going to, the idea of faulty wiring, to me, was very symbolic.
Yes.
Wait, time out. Sorry. Before we get there. So I don't know if either of you picked this up, too, but when they were saying that the professor was going to do Section 32, Sound and Vision, then they went, the next sentence said Section 39, Sound and Vision. They changed the number by 7. I know I'm crazy with the numbers, but they changed the number. No one else caught that?
I wasn't paying attention to that.
Okay. Did not. Oh, my God. Stop.
Yeah, it was Section 32, Sound and Vision. The general steals the professor, puts the papers in the transmitter and paper into the voice code. And that's what I was calling it in the beginning, the voice code. And then it said Section 39 plus 7, and it changed the name on the changes name on lecture, but stays the same. So it was very... That happened. That changed from when they're talking about Sound and Vision, it changed from 32 to 39. Okay. So I just,
you catch the best things.
I just, the numbers. I totally went online and I was like, I was looking up to see if someone did the work for me because I was being lazy to see if there was some sort of website that says how all the numbers come into
play. I want
play.
You to put all the numbers and make a number station frequent, like, out of it. Do you know what a number station is?
No.
I'll have to go on a rant. I love number station, but from like early like World War II where they had coded messages and it would be like a repeat series of like 4 or 5 numbers over and over on radio frequency transmissions.
There's some code there. I'm telling you.
Yeah.
I'm telling you.
You're going to decode it. Like,
need to get to the end.
I'm
going to
decode
it,
and I'm going
to
be like the guest speaker next year. Because we're going.
Of course. I'll go next year.
You said. You gave me the pinky.
Well, what's nice is, I have some ideas.
Okay.
That'll kind of help that. That we'll talk off air. So here we go into the town hall, this is the weirdest thing in the world.
Oh my god!
Because if nothing else, the coins.
Yeah.
And the little hand that grabs the little coin
that
like
was
a little
so grabby hands, so grabby hands.
It was grabby hands.
It was very unnecessary.
So unnecessary.
The whole thing was unnecessary. Like, there could have been like a way different.
Also,
I don't know, man.
Guys,
that was the weirdest way
ever. Guys, top hats and glasses. That is not a disguise, but it fooled everyone.
But here's
the thing. It did till it didn't. What's with the blood, man?
His
hand. What's with the blood? I know, but it was very weird blood.
He was so off his game.
Yeah, like,
he was really off his
game. You're not, like, once you get in, you're on, like, high spy alert. You're like, holy crap, I'm in. I'm like, where are my spy days?
Danger Man never would have let that happen.
Yeah, he got stabbed by a pen? Come on. What did he get stabbed by? It was like a...
It was the information. He got stabbed by the information.
Right, but they didn't inject anything in
him. No, at all. He was just bleeding a lot. He should have cleaned up and he should never have taken his glasses off. He should have known better. I was so angry at that.
Well, but at that point, when he got stabbed, that's when I was going back to number 12, knew what he would try and do and set them all up to get stabbed. I thought he was going to pass out. I thought they were going to take him and brainwash him again. Mm-hmm. But that didn't happen. But who doesn't wipe the blood?
Well, he's got a mission.
Got to bleed all over. No, he was watching the TV. He was looking in the
binoculars. No, but that's
and you put your face closer. Come on. I would have been a better spy.
Number 2 is watching everything.
Yeah, but he could have seemed like a great employee, just kind of regardless of like, it could have been a heart bleed. It could have been wounds everywhere. It's like, no, I'm going to do my job, number 2. I'm here for you.
No.
No.
I'd want my employees to bleed for me.
We do,
good
Phil.
Yeah, we do, on the inside.
A lot.
Anyway. No, but
he lobbed that one right into us. He was like, here you go.
You know, just in terms of the top hats, it's a very old school kind of thinking of what's, you know, I think part of the, you know, the coins and everything else, it recognizes, you know, a protocol that, again, is very unnecessary, but because it's tradition, we have to adhere to tradition.
Yeah. It's very secret society, Illuminati-esque.
Yeah.
And they look like Undertakers because in many ways, you know, this is the death of independent thought.
Yeah. Did anyone else, and again, I know sometimes I come up with crazy thoughts, when they were doing the coin thing, I was like, oh, so are these guys some, is there like a monetary value to being in this
No,
club
I think they were just chips.
This?
I don't think they're actually coins.
I don't think they were actually like coins because it didn't look that way, but I was like, because that's the only other thing I think
like
of.
I thought it was like a badge or like a pin. So they would take the pin so they would know like
who it was.
But maybe it's blood money. Maybe it represents blood money.
Something. Like, I just thought that it was very like, you know, the only other time, because what I thought about was like a quarter going in, some sort, you know what I mean? Yeah. So, like, because it looked like that, not the actual coin, but because it looked like that taking money from you, something, it, I don't know. No? Okay.
You could be right. Could be. I don't know.
It's a good observation.
It certainly is. And I thought the uniformed policemen, they were symbolic of censorship.
Yes.
That's what I thought.
Yeah,
I could see that.
I call it that.
With their batons.
That's right. Speaking of getting caught in the tape and all of that, where's our? There's a picture that we have. You know, that's the blood reveals him, and we go and find the professor, and eventually.
I like how his number in the town hall was number 56. Why 5-6?
I don't know, Steph. See, you keep asking me questions.
I thought you guys would know. I want the information on the numbers.
I don't have information. I told you. I opened up this. If you want information, do not come here.
Just come here for speculation.
Yes.
Want it. 5-6.
Figure it out. Become the, find the information. Uncover it.
I'm gonna.
All right, so this is, so let's you know, we're at the last bit of it, right? And you want to talk about Imitation Game and everything like that. And I want to kind of start with the question why, right? Everything all goes to hell when you ask why. And I think that's, by the way, symbolic just in life of when you keep asking why, you know, I think it's good to know a certain amount of information. I think it's good to have a belief system and be open to other things. But when you just dig too deep, you start to become unhappy and don't ask questions you don't need to know answers to.
Oh, I totally disagree.
Wow.
Oh, my God. Did you really just say all that, youngin' over there?
Yeah let's go back. I don't really have an opinion, so let's remember that.
What did I say? Shut up.
No, dude, I feel like that's the whole problem with the world. Nobody asks why. I want to know why. The good, bad, the ugly. I want to know why. How do you expect anything to get better if you don't know why it happens? How do you expect anyone to know? Like, that literally, one of these projects that I work on, I go and I interview people, and it is the most insane thing that if you ask someone a question, they'll start talking about it within 2 minutes. Does not fail. They will contradict what they said because they have no idea why they think the way they think.
Somewhere you're right. I take it back.
Somewhere they... Right. There you go. Somewhere they heard information from someone that they thought they gave some sort of credibility to, and they're like, oh, that's my belief system. Not everyone, but a lot of people. And probably, a lot of people that watch this show probably might not be that group. They seem to be the people that might question things
more.
We
have some pretty intelligent viewers here.
But, you know, come on, man. You got to question why.
Yeah.
First off, I didn't say don't question why. I said...
We kind of did.
I said really question did. Why to a certain extent.
No, always ask why. Yeah. It's who, what, where, when, why.
And how.
And why is a crooked letter.
Who cares? How.
And how is important.
How do you do it? Why do you do it? It's two different things. One is the meta, you know, it's almost the metaphysical, like why? What's, you can't,
right,
there's no absolute with why. How you can have an absolute answer.
Right.
Why
how
is
just information. Yeah. Why is the thought behind it? Mm-hmm. Because we might do something the same, like you might see the same end result, but the why might be different. And that's what's important.
Well, I will never be able to pronounce this word, but But as the prisoner said, it is the question that cannot be answered by man or machine. So how do you, Steph Z, answer why?
About what?
You can't ask what, when, why.
42.
Okay.
Okay, I'm in.
But how do you do that? How do you you know? It's the question that can't be answered. Why?
There's a lot of questions that can. There's a lot of ways to answer that.
Then answer it.
Why? Why is it crooked letter?
No, don't ask me why. I want you to answer that. Just answer the why.
Why what?
No, why not? Why, how, when, what?
Who's on first?
And that is how you kill the general,
right?
Absolutely.
Or any logical thinking.
Well, but that's so symbolic exactly of that. It's like once you question the system, the system breaks.
That's so good.
That's really what it is. It's like if you think about, God, if you were to really think about all the people in, like, take the United States as a whole. You think about all the news we're fed, all this we're fed, all, like, these taxes. If everyone at once questioned why do we pay these taxes and stop paying these taxes, we have so much more power than the government, really. But we don't question why.
That
we just say, okay.
Revolution.
Right. But asking why, it messes, breaks the system, man. Boom!
Boom. It does.
Boom!
Very good. You know, obviously I have tons of stuff to talk about, but anything you guys want to begin with in particular?
Oh my gosh.
We could look at this fun meme that I found.
Yeah, let's look at this fun meme because there's so much to talk about. I definitely want to make sure we go back to the reflection of celebrity on academics.
Got it.
Oh my God, this is amazing. Because this is, read it. It says, not sure if I forgot everything or never learned it. This is high school.
And it's Fry from Futurama.
I mean, I passed high school. I passed with the Honor Society. Yeah. Do I remember anything they taught me? No. Because they didn't teach me the why. They just taught me what happened.
How.
Yeah, or the how, like the facts. So I reiterated the facts the way they wanted me to pass a specific test. And then, but if I would have learned why certain things happen, I probably would have retained more information because it'd be more interesting.
And the thing about that is learning isn't memorization. Learning is understanding.
Yes. Hmm. Boom.
And here's another funny one, right, that I want to bring up. I don't know if you guys can read it, but it's...
For a fair selection, everybody has to take the same exam. Please climb that tree. And it's got birds, a monkey, a penguin, a elephant, a fish, a seal, and what's probably a wild coyote.
That's right. That's
our education system.
And so the point is that everyone learns differently. We need to, we need to treat, to a certain extent, as much as we can, people as individuals so that way they can...
We don't do that. And what we do now, which is even worse, we rate our teachers on how many kids pass these freaking standardized tests.
No child left behind BS.
Horseshit.
Like, I'm sorry, not everybody gets a gold star. Like, if you fail, you fail, and you should learn how to, like...
Don't even get me started on the participation trophies.
Oh, well, like, that whole, like, that Montessori school of thought, like, this whole, like, you know, everyone's a free spirit, and we need to, like... No, you have to... teach children, and if one child is suffering, all the rest of the kids shouldn't have to suffer. That child either needs to be put into a special education program, or maybe some more attention needs to be placed on them, because not everyone is going to learn at the same speed. But we can't punish those who are excelling in academics for those who aren't.
Well, and that's exactly why we keep everyone in this box together, even though there's people that could go beyond the box and people that don't belong in the box.
Because, I graduated high school in 99, and I was really fortunate that I was in AP honors gifted. Yeah. Like, I was able to learn at my pace, which was great for me, and I recognize there are people who can't learn at the same pace, but... Like, I don't know. I have no context of what school is like now other than what my mom, though she works on the non-administrative or non-teaching side.
It's terrible now. I have a lot of teacher friends. I have some teaching friends that I've went to the schools in North Carolina and some in New York to see the differences. And this whole no kid left behind thing, it's terrible. And it really is now. The teachers get rated on a percentage of how their students pass. So you can have this kid. And the thing is that... You know, we have to really choose, and like, just because I've been in this, I choose it. It's, you know, just because, you know, you and I maybe were in honors classes and other kids weren't, or like, we were so program to say that these kids aren't as smart or
but
these
that's
kids
not true.
But they're not, because these kids could be, you know, what we're teaching them is such a linear way of thinking, and they could actually be beyond that way of thinking and can excel faster than gifted, faster than honors. They're just not hearing it in the right. Yeah. It's like a different language
almost.
We need to learn how to speak all the languages to these kids and provide these things, because that's the biggest. That's our future. The education of these kids, the next generation, and we're failing them.
We just happen to learn at a certain pace, and luckily we were lucky enough that there was an institution in place that catered to us. But there are so many kids who are actually left behind. You know, just accelerating them and giving them that gold star and passing them on up doesn't actually make them, you know, learn anything. They're truly being left behind in the fact that they're not being given what they need to learn. And that's why this whole notion that you have to know X amount of facts to pass a certain test so a school can get a good grade and get more money from the state is it's ridiculous. It's failing our children, and it's failing ourselves as a society.
And I think here's what I will also argue is that it puts everything into kind of one very simplified bubble. It passes off so much responsibility, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so in the sense of like, hey, schools should be responsible for my child's education. Well, no. Like, at the end of the day, yes, the education system needs a lot of improvement. But at the same time, even on the best day, you know, if overall they're spending 6 hours a day there, right, on average.
Yeah.
That's 6 hours out of 24 hours a day, and they're only, what, 5 days out of the week?
But it's not even that. I'll tell you what
the point is that education cannot come just from a singular entity.
Yeah,
and the responsibility of that needs to come from all over. And by the way, yes, mm-hmm. certainly as a parent you should take on that responsibility, but then also I think we just – ourselves pass on off responsibility, whether on a peer-to-peer level or older person to younger person, in the sense of, like, if you see a young kid doing something wrong, like, scold them.
Yeah. So here's something interesting. You know there's that old adage, it takes a village to raise a child?
Ironic.
Ironic, because it really does take a village to raise a child, and we don't have that mentality anymore. Because if I were in... as it happens oftentimes when I'm in Sherman Oaks, especially at the Whole Foods, I'm talking to every mother who brings their child into the Whole Foods in Sherman Oaks, that child will sit there and kick and scream. And I've had a child run into me on several occasions. And God forbid I go to, like, I'm not talking about like raising a hand to a child, but if you speak to that child and say, excuse me, don't do that, the parents flip out on you. They like, don't talk to, who are you to tell my child what they can and can't do? Well, you're obviously not raising your damn child, right? If they're running around screaming in a freaking grocery store and running into me or taking things out of my hand, like, no, that's your failure as a parent.
Oh my God.
Or your nanny.
Don't even get me started on this. All right, first, if you've got parents, when it comes to education, the parents don't want the responsibility, but they are the first to judge and criticize the teachers. Mm-hmm. So you've got this terrible hamster spinning wheel that, and I believe it, like, we expect teachers to do this stuff, but there is so much red tape. You can't discipline kids the same way as we got disciplined when we were in high school.
Yeah,
because some parents going to call Child Protective Services on you. We're not talking rulers. We're just talking a straight up, like,
a talk.
Scolding. Like, I am such a proponent, like, there needs to be discipline. There is not discipline these days. Number two, so many parents now, I feel, and I could be wrong, agree or disagree, parents are living vicariously through their kids because they see all this attention and this Twitter and this Instagram and this shit that the kids have that they don't have, and they're like, whoa! But I want to be part of this, but I don't really know how. So they are. That's why these parents get so pissed off that their kid didn't get an award. That's why they go and talk to the principal. That's why things exist, like participation trophies. You don't get a trophy for participation. I went to a gymnastics competition when I was in New York. They gave out 27th place to this kid in a contest. If your kid gets 27th place in a gymnastics contest, find a new freaking sport.
Well,
they're not
to be
good.
Fair, if it was out of, let's say, 10,000, that's pretty good.
Yeah, no, but there's no.
Everyone who competed.
No, it's so, not good. Like, that's what we're teaching these kids. It's like, we're not teaching them how to fail. We're not teaching them how to bounce back. We're teaching them that, oh, your mom's going to go complain. Your mom might be one of the people that gives money to the school. Oh, let's make it better for you.
Steph,
the world doesn't work that way.
I want to ask your opinion on this notion of coddling. So there's a website called Tumblr that a lot of kids frequent, and they post pictures and stories. And there's a movement on Tumblr because apparently being depressed is actually very cool, and we should reward people by being depressed. And there's like a group there that every time someone will post about, oh, I actually got out of bed today and put on clothing, people will actually celebrate that as if that's an achievement in life. How do you feel about it? I'm, like, honestly curious. Like, we've talked about entitlement. We've talked about coddling. Like, to this level, like, to me, this is the epitome of apathy.
Here's the thing.
World.
We're downgrading what the actual disease or, like, condition, right?
That's
what the actual
saying.
Condition is.
I think it's making
depression seem cool,
and
though.
And I feel like I have a lot of thoughts on this, actually. I've done a lot of research.
This all ties back into
everything. I've done research because I know people that struggle from depression. Not myself, but I do actually.
Yeah. So,
And I feel like, yes, they're a place for these people, because sometimes getting out of bed for these people really is something that they need support in. That's a step in the right direction. To be on a forum like Tumblr that is not a doctor, like, it would be very different if there was a group of doctors that have specialized in depression, created this site that was a secure site for people to go to and to have this anonymity thing to get support. That'd be one thing. But almost creating something
like a crutch.
I'm hearing from you is that, and I could be interpreting this wrong, but what I'm hearing for you is that it's seen as being cool. So maybe people that don't really have this diagnosis are going there thinking it's almost cool. And I think that there's a very fine line, but I do think that there, you know, should be tools for these people, because there are a lot of people that do struggle with these things. You know, like, if you're someone that
but
struggles,
it also gives you an excuse, right? If I'm an average person and it's like, okay, well, whoa, I don't want to go to school, man, get off me. I'm depressed, dude. You know?
But that's the fine line. And that's the problem with, you know, almost everything in this world, really. Because you have the people that actually really do suffer from this thing, where these tools could be good. Then you have the people that don't suffer from this and need something somewhere to fit in, that are like, oh, I'm going to fit in with this. Like, look at, like, ADD and Ritalin and shit. Mm-hmm. Like, we didn't have all those diagnoses when I was in high school. It was called you weren't paying attention. Is it more real now? Who knows? Is there more stuff in the air that causes this? Who knows? Or is this just an excuse to why your kid is not paying attention? Like, there's a fun, and I'm not a doctor, so I don't know enough about it, but I definitely do think that, because I think that, you know, when we go back to this depression thing, I think that if it was something where doctors actually regulated it, it wouldn't be the woe's me situation. It would be more like, okay, so now that you've got up, now you need to go out and do something. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like it wouldn't just be that way, but the other people would be like, yeah, man, you got out of bed. All right, cool. Now go back to bed for a couple hours or whatever.
And the reason I brought that up is because tying into everything with the way the education system is and everyone is kind of a special snowflake, I feel that we have created, it's true though.
That's the quote of the day.
You haven't heard special snowflake. Oh my God. I feel that we in American society specifically have created this environment, this culture that rewards the least amount of work, and that people in a way to feel like they are individuals have glommed onto these notions and ideas of albinism, depression, you know, there's a group of people who truly believe in, like, so I'm a big supporter of trans rights. I feel there are a lot of people in this world who truly were born in the wrong bodies. But taking a step further, there are people who are like, no, it's not that I'm actually a girl in a man's body. I'm actually what is known as an otherkin. I believe that I am a dragon who is really born into a body. And to me, you see this group of people that have taken this weird special snowflake thing and have actually made the actual struggles that people who face in the day-to-day with depression, homosexuality, you know, trans life, and demeaned it in so many ways.
Well, I think the problem is that, and like I said, I just think that the problem is there's some people ruin it for everyone. You know what I mean? No. It's like the same thing that, you know, to break it down on a more, you know, basic level, it's like, you know, say you go to a concert and they have to, you know, there's alcohol available, but some people take alcohol too far mm-hmm. and get super drunk and drive home drunk and hurt people and this, that, and the other thing. So the next time they do a concert, they don't allow alcohol. When there's so many people that might just be like, oh, I just want to have a drink and watch mm-hmm. a show. You know what I mean? Like there's in the society we live, there's people that take everything a little bit too far, and that kind of ruins it for everyone else. I feel like that's kind of the situation with both of the things that you brought yeah. up, because, you know, and maybe a couple years ago, when I didn't know, you know, didn't know people that had depression, mm-hmm. so I kind of tried to do some research, because in the beginning I felt like how you felt. I was like, dude, get out of bed. What is your problem? Like, and I was very, not aggressive, but I was more so like, dude, seriously, like, get over yourself. Like, I didn't understand, because I've been sad about shit. Like, I haven't lived a perfect life, mm-hmm. you know what I mean? But I have the attitude of like, all right, bounce back, you know? But now that I've done some research, like, I get that it is something that does exist for some people, but I feel like, again, you know, we blanket everything. It's mm-hmm. kind of, and we blanket everything with education, yeah. too. And it kind of all comes back to that.
The last thing that I want to kind of leave on this episode.
Now we're going to get a drink. No, just kidding.
One of the things we didn't talk about was the overimportance of computers, right? And, you know, and to me right now in this day and age, that can mean a tablet. It can mean, you know, your smartphone. It can mean your TV, your watch, yeah. anything, right? Your sneakers. Right. I don't care. Anything that has a piece of technology in it, you know, you hold very near and dear. And you give – it almost becomes factual. Well, you know, it's online. It's on the computer. It's on my phone. It's this. And then it's Bible.
Oh, excuse me. Like, anytime anyone on Facebook shares a link to a not trusted news site and suddenly everyone believes what's being said, like, all those clickbaity titles and are like, you're never going to believe what happened. And we're going to, like, source something that has no basis in fact. And people just spread it as truth. Like, you see this in photos. There was a couple years ago a photo of a giant tornado in Mississippi that people were like, look at this tornado touched down. And it wasn't. It was, like, from, like, New Zealand, first off, and it was, like, a doctored photo. Like, people just, if it's presented to them in front of them and someone says, oh, this is true, everyone will believe it as fact. There's no doubt anymore. There's no thought process behind people actually going out and critical thinking and trying to determine for themselves if something's real or not. People want to be spoon-fed.
There's no why.
Exactly. And the last thing I'll leave on, it's, fellas, if you see that picture of Bigfoot is blurry. That's the problem. All right. So, thank you guys. Thank you guys for joining us on another after show here for The Prisoner on AfterBuzz TV. You know, let us know. We obviously discussed many, many things, but there's so much more we could discuss, and we try to keep the, you know, we're still experimenting, believe it or not.
Sorry, I went on huge tangents today. No, I just had a lot of things I wanted to talk about.
Hey, man, I like tangents.
But yeah, we if there's anything that we didn't touch upon, of course, that's what the comments sections are for. You know, we like to talk with you guys. We get the conversation going. You guys continue it for years and years because this show's so great. In 45 years.
I know. Look at that.
Soon enough, I know. Next week, we will be doing many happy returns. This is this is going to be a very, very fun episode. I can't wait to get Steph Z's thoughts on it. Speaking of Steph Z's thoughts, she is available to speak to online at
All you special snowflakes out there can tweet or Instagram me at IAMSTEFZ. I love you all.
And Meredith Placco.
You can find me at MPLACKO. And really, don't shut up. Always question. Always ask why.
That's right. And you can follow us here at AfterBuzz TV, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. Like I said, subscribe, rate, comment, and more specifically, tell a friend. You know what? It goes back to Plato's allegory of the cave, you know? Why just listen to our podcast if you're not going to spread the word? Spread the word!
Spread it. Spread it.
You know? So thank you guys for listening. Be seeing you.
From executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
Buzz, see you later.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.